Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is Brian Dickey, who is the general director of the Chicago Opera Theater. And welcome, Brian.
Thank you very much. I'm absolutely delighted.
Well, what I was stunned, I don't know why it took me 20 years to see an opera, but I think I was filled with a lot of the myths that some people who don't go to opera have about, you know, it's being the fat lady singing in the corner. Boy, your Don Giovanni just was a spectacular, very modern, beautifully sung show. And I just thought I had to get someone on from your company that to tell people about this amazing show and why they should come see opera.
Well, what can I say? I mean, the fact of the matter is we're called Chicago Opera Theater. So our emphasis is not away from music, because we absolutely give a huge emphasis on that as well. But we take very, very, very seriously indeed the whole theater aspect of our mission, our responsibilities. Because, I mean, we believe passionately that opera is the most thrilling of all the performing art forms, combining, as it does, in a really wonderful way, the arts of music, theater, and dance. And we just take a huge amount of trouble to make absolutely certain that what we're doing is going to appeal to an intelligent and informed audience, and particularly to one which may have had prejudices about opera because of bad stuff they might have seen or heard about opera. But people who are receptive and understanding that you know, these great works of world theater, which is what opera, the best operas are as valid today as they ever were. And in a way, they're even more valid, particularly if done the way we do them, where we hold up a mirror to the audience and say, look here, these are real flesh and blood people. They're kind of archetypes in one way, but they are tangible personalities that you may recognize some of your friends. You may recognize yourself. You may feel uncomfortable about recognizing your friends and yourself, but this is art. And I think in the case of Don Giovanni, we have actually shocked some people into thinking much more deeply and thoroughly about the nature of this. You know, it's accepted, you know, Don Giovanni is one of Mozart's great masterpieces. But why? Why is it a masterpiece? And I think that we have posed that question, and we have demonstrated through the production that this remarkable woman, Diane Paulus, has done, that here we have an exposition of human nature, as we might wish to deny it, but which is what it is. The dark side is there.
Yeah,
the joy is there.
He's quite a hedonist, isn't he?
Well, you know, there are people out there like that.
Oh, yes.
And the question is, it's a moral issue. What do we do about these folks? Do we just accept them and sort of dress them up and make them, you know, hero worship them? Or do we actually take a position about good and evil? You know, theatre is a lot about the conflict of good and evil and resolving all that. And this Don Giovanni is a fantastic opera, but I mean, people pay lip service very much to the fact, you know, this is one of Mozart's great operas, but they don't really actually quite understand why. And time and time and time again, I've been into the opera house and I've seen sort of tribute paid to Mozart, and actually these characters dress up in period costumes, posturing around the stage, possibly in many cases cast completely inappropriately, not bearing any resemblance to the personalities that Mozart and his fantastic genius librettist Lorenzo da Ponte, that the characters that they drew. It makes a complete nonsense of it. And what COT does is what all good theatre companies do: challenge the audience, say, look here, look into this glass, however dark it may be, and see people that you know, see yourself, and understand better as a result of being in that darkened room for 3 hours with that extraordinary music and all the immersion. you will understand better human nature and the human condition.
What? Let me ask you this. Creatively, what got you guys to set it the way you did? I mean, with the red backdrop, and it appears like it's a bordello. And
well, actually, what it is based on is a very, very upmarket, high-level private club in New York. And the things that go on in that club in New York are very much part of the inspiration to Diane Paulus of when she was considering how she was going to deal with this extremely difficult subject. Now, look, I don't think it's insignificant that our conductor and our director, our stage director, are both women. And I think that we have here a very interesting analysis of Don Giovanni, which men, when they see it, are much more uncomfortable with than women. So we've taken a bit of flack, actually, the last 48 hours from maybe a bunch of guilty men. Who knows?
Yeah, I can understand that.
You know?
It's definitely from the woman's point of view.
Well, it's from the people that are suffering as a result of this guy's attitude and way of dealing with life. From their point of view, they happen to be women, but they are the people who are being victimized and being exploited and generally disrespected by this dissolute guy's behavior. You know, the alternative title to Don Giovanni is, in Italian, Il dissoluto punito, the dissolute man punished.
Oh, well, that certainly happens.
So that, and, you know, that's what Don Giovanni is. But so often, he's almost turned into not an anti-hero, but an actual hero in productions that I've seen. It's completely scandalous, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah, because he's definitely not a hero.
No.
If he is, we're really in trouble.
Well, exactly. Well, I mean, there was some thing I saw in the newspaper, a headline I saw in a newspaper the other day, which said, rape is not a laughing matter. Okay?
Yeah.
And I think we just need to remember that.
Yeah. Well, let me point out a couple things for our audience that struck me as a non-opera person who is now just addicted to it after one show. It was sung in Italian. The super titles helped, but you know, after a while, I didn't need to look at them. Maybe I glanced at them. The staging, the emotion of the singers, you are able to follow the story.
Well, that's what music does, you know. I mean, what this extraordinary genius of Mozart does is he somehow encapsulates in his music all that range of emotions that human beings experience, and somehow enables them to be expressed in a way which is completely understandable without your actually necessarily having to know every single word that is being sung. Because it comes through the music. Of course it comes to an extent through the language and through the body language and the general way that the actors conduct themselves. And I think we've got a pretty gifted cast in that respect.
It was terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, how you cast such terrific voices and people who are such excellent actors, too.
Well, that's what we try to do. I mean, by and large, you can succeed in doing that if you know that is what you want to do. A lot of companies, particularly those that are singing, producing the 19th century operas in these humongous great theaters, they got a problem because actually there's a very, very great shortage of singers who can actually sing a lot of this stuff. We are not in that position because, I mean, we can really choose precisely the types that we want for the kind of repertory that we do. So we're in an advantageous position.
Yeah, that is.
But I mean, you still have to take a lot of trouble over it, nevertheless.
Oh, yeah. And because a lot of people think that, you know, again, it's the fat lady in the corner and the big bass baritone, and all they do is belt out and nothing seems to happen.
I think a lot of people have that sort of prejudice, but I think that's going. I think it's gone to a great extent. I know it still exists to a certain extent, but I do think that people have to actually go in and see the work that we do, and they can actually have their whole attitude to opera changed. And right. they can, as you appear to have done, be completely beguiled by it and somehow become passionate adherents, and that's great.
I mean, it was 3 hours where it could have gone on another 3 hours.
You are an angel. I'm delighted to hear this. This is very good news.
And I'll tell you, it was hard getting me there, but Colleen did a terrific job.
And it's going to be hard to keep you away. That's great.
Yeah, I have to experience more of this because I passionately wanted to get you on for the interview so that we can spread the word.
Yeah.
Because Don Giovanni is just fantastic.
Good. Well.
The music, I mean, your 40-plus musicians sounded absolutely great. And folks, no microphones.
Oh, no microphones. We don't do microphones.
Yeah, I just think that, and hearing a performer's project in a big space, and you can hear them, and it's as crystal clear, sends quite a message, because that's one of my other pet peeves is even with Mike, there's some singers around, you can't hear them. They can't project 2 feet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so you've got to be proud of this production.
Well, I am proud of it. I mean, you know, we work very hard. We can very committed to what we do. We do take a huge amount of trouble trying to get all the detail right. And if you do that, then it tends to pan out correctly. And one feels at the end of the day immensely satisfied because I think we make a difference to people's lives in a certain way.
Well, it's certainly amazing. And so tell us now about the rest of your season. And this is the first show of your season.
This is the first show. We ran a sort of three-opera spring season following on from the Lyric Opera. And we're following this with the a new production of a wonderful new opera by John Adams, who is one of the great figures in modern American music, with a huge international reputation. And this opera is called A Flowering Tree. It's based on an ancient, I think 2,000-year-old southern Indian sort of legend or fairy story. And it contains within it many of the same themes that are in Mozart's The Magic Flute about young love and the struggle to and the trials you have to go through to get fulfillment and happiness and peace and all those good things.
Sounds very interesting. And it's a small cast show, isn't it?
Well, there are three principal singers. There are 9 dancers. And there's a chorus of 24.
Oh, okay.
So there are quite a lot of people on stage.
Yeah, there are a lot.
The actual cast of Solos is small.
It sounds interesting. And that opens May 14th.
That opens on Wednesday, May 14th. And there are 5 performances in all. And the composer himself, John Adams, a great, great man of American music, he's conducting the first 2 performances.
Oh.
Yeah.
Excellent. How did you land that?
Well, he's a good guy, and he liked what we did when we did his Nixon in China here in 2006.
Yeah, I had heard a lot of great about that.
Yeah, and I went to the world premiere of this new piece in Vienna in November, and I had lunch with him the next day, and we discussed it, and he agreed to come and conduct the first 2 performances. The only reason he's not doing them all is because he's already committed himself to go to Amsterdam to conduct some concert performances of it the following week. So he has to zoom off to Holland, to Amsterdam. But his unbelievably wonderful Portuguese lady assistant, Joana Carneiro, who is already establishing herself as a major force in music here. She's the associate conductor of the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra. She's taking over the last 3 and has been, in fact, working with us the last 3 weeks in preparing the production.
Okay, let me ask you, is that a trend now with the ladies getting involved as conductors?
Well, a trend, I don't know whether it is, but there are a lot of good ones there, and I've had, I think in my years here, I've had about 4 or 5 different women conductors, which may very well be a record.
Okay.
I haven't even sort of thought of it in those terms. I hire the best people I can find, irrespective of their gender, or sex, or orientation, color, whatever it may be. You know, I mean, I get the best people I can possibly find. And it so happens that there are some exceptionally able women conductors. And one of the reasons perhaps they're so able, the ones that emerge, is because they have to be especially good in order to break through certain barriers.
Yeah, isn't that true? But I'll tell you, the ladies are taking over the world, aren't they?
I love them.
Yes, I do too.
They're wonderful colleagues. They work so splendidly. And they've got much less inflated egos than men, you know.
I guess that's true. So yeah. What's coming up after A Flowering Tree?
And then we proceed to a Handel opera called Orlando, which will be conducted by a gentleman. This time we have a man, one of the most distinguished conductors of sort of early music, who's been around for more than 50 years around the world, called Raymond Leppard, former music director of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, but really a man of huge distinction and great eminence. And great wisdom, and he's in charge of Orlando, which is based on the Ariosto, Orlando Furioso sort of story. So that's our final offering of the season.
And that opens the 28th of May.
That opens on the Wednesday, 2 weeks after Flowering Tree, indeed, on the 28th of May.
So now, as managing director, you've got to tell me how you can mount three major works like this, back to back to back.
Well, we've got a great team of people here. We have a system. I mean, we know more or less what we're doing, and we just apply good rules and good practices to the way we prepare things and try to schedule things in a way which is doable and workable. It's all very, very, very carefully planned. I mean, it doesn't just sort of happen in a haphazard way. We know what needs to be done. We plan it and schedule it accordingly.
What's the...
It's a bit like... I guess it's a bit like building a Boeing 747. You know, you just have to put all the pieces together in the right order, understand your business, and get it done.
Well, it certainly sounds easy, but the proof is always in the pudding.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just take Giovanni now. Tell us about the rehearsal process for that show, because besides this 3 hours of, you know, absolutely fabulous music, you have so much movement on the stage.
What happens is that, I mean, there's a logical order of rehearsing things. First of all, you prepare the thing musically and make sure that the cast is absolutely impeccably accurate about the text, both the musical and the words. They then go into staging rehearsals, and in fact do staging rehearsals for 3 weeks, 6 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Wow.
This isn't just a sort of rehearsal every Tuesday evening for a month or so. This is 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, for 4 weeks, intensive rehearsal. Firstly, stage with piano in a rehearsal room, then stage with piano in the theater, and then we have the orchestra and all the other components with the scenery, of course, but the costumes and the wigs and the makeup and the lights and so on and so forth. And so the whole thing builds one layer upon the other, and then we end up the last 4 or 5 days with all the components there together, and then we do polishing, and making absolutely certain that everything is as it should be. It's all, you know, nothing is left to chance. But I hope that at the same time we still retain a degree of natural spontaneity in an individual performance, because you don't want it to become a sort of automaton.
Oh no!
But nevertheless, things are not left to chance. They're very, very rigorously disciplined, planned, and rehearsed, and so forth.
So, just logistically, you as managing director, because I'm sure they all of these rehearsals overlap.
Oh yes, yeah. I mean we had three operas in different stages of rehearsal at once.
Yeah.
When we opened Don Giovanni on Wednesday. We are already rehearsing The Flowering Tree and The Handle. Now we're just performing Don Giovanni, and The Flowering Tree, the John Adams, is in a more advanced stage, and The Orlando is getting into it as well. So, you know, between now and the end of the first week in June, we will have completed the run of three separate productions. And must remember, these are all brand new productions. All the elements are new. Scenery, sets, costumes, the lighting is from scratch. Everything is from scratch. So it's quite a task. But, you know, we know our business. We get it done.
So you must be having fun when it all comes together.
When the show's on, we're greatly relieved. But then, of course, we've got another show ready to be got on. So we're struggling with that, or not struggling, but at least spending a lot of time and watching it and making sure that it gets right. Once that's on, then we've got the third one. And then when the third one's on, we can sort of take a collective sigh of relief.
Okay,
we made it.
Great. Let's do a little commercial now. Don Giovanni's running through.
Don Giovanni runs through. The last performance is the Sunday afternoon of Mother's Day, which is the 11th of May.
Correct.
Whether Don Giovanni is just the thing you want to bring your mother to, I don't know. That would depend on you and your mother.
If you got a hip mother, if she loves Mozart music, that's enough.
Absolutely. At any rate, she would see it from the woman's point of view, so that's all quite healthy.
Right, and it's at the
and
Harris.
What you need to do is you need to dial 312-704-8414 to book tickets, and then you also have an alternative way of doing it by going to the Chicago Opera Theater website, which is Chicago Opera Theater, all one word. With theater, theater.org. And we've got a good interactive site there which enables you to buy tickets.
Yes, it did.
And you've got to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And when you go to the Chicago Opera Theater website, you will find links to all kinds of additional information about
the. And it's at the Harris Theater, which is a terrific venue.
We might just want to mention the fact of where this is. The Harris Theater, a marvelous theater in Millennium Park. Opposite the Aon building there, 1,400 extremely comfortable seats, each one perfect sight lines, and the whole room, the theater has a fantastic acoustic.
Yes, it does.
So, there you have it.
Well, let's remind them on the second show opens.
That opens on the 14th.
On the 14th, and that's A Flowering Tree by John Adams.
Yeah. And then we've got subsequent performances on the following Saturday, which must be the 17th. And then on the following Tuesday, and Friday and Sunday.
And then Orlando follows that.
And then Orlando follows that.
Yeah, that's the Handle show. So you've got quite a variety of
well, I try to plan a season which is all quality works, but not all the same, you know, which give a reasonable degree of coverage of the 400-year-old repertory of opera. I mean, opera is a comparatively new art form compared with theater, which goes back to the Greeks and indeed further. We've only been going since 1597, you see.
Oh. Okay, yeah, that is relatively new, considering the Greeks thousands of years ago.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So in the remaining moments we have, give a little capitalization of why young people who like the performing arts, you know, who go to Wicked and they go to Jersey Boys and they go to Shakespeare, why they should try you guys out. Why should they come and see opera at the Chicago Opera Theater?
Well, they should come to see it because we passionately believe that this sort of combination of all the various different arts in a single art form, music, dance, and theater, is just overwhelmingly stimulating. And when done as thrillingly as is done by us, this is opera less ordinary, right? That's our tagline. And my goodness, we take that very, very seriously. And I think that we appeal to, we open people's eyes and ears to something that they, in many cases, could never imagine existed. And for those that might have had prejudices about it, we dispose of those prejudices instantly. I mean, the moment the curtain goes up, you see that it is not waiting for the fat lady to sing.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And folks, that's why I thought this was a very important interview to do.
Yeah.
And just thank you so much. And
it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
And thank Colleen for just keep nudging me to come and see the show. You know, you get busy, and I was a little uncomfortable because I don't totally understand opera, but, you know, I'm getting to the point where...
You'll get to grips with it.
Yeah, I'm getting the gist of it. I mean, what's the not
It'll
like...
It'll press a whole bunch of buttons which you didn't even know were there.
When Mozart music, I've heard the score, and the music is so great.
Yeah.
And, you know, Handel and all the other top people. And then when you see terrific staging, I mean, this is as good as anything I've seen on Broadway in terms of staging and costume and lighting. I mean, you guys really, really do a great job with that.
Well, thank you so much.
And so that's why I had to get this interview on. And thank you for helping explain why people should come out and see opera.
Good. Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you.
All right.
And folks, make sure you go see a play this weekend.
Absolutely.
Possibly an opera.
Go for it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine.